That was a football game. Holy hell. Seahawks, Rams, Thursday night football was insane. We'll get into it in just a second. I don't think anybody is beating either one of those teams in the NFC playoff field when we get there. And we're both basically locked in now. But who will be the one seed last night may have had a lot to say about that. We'll get into all of what we saw last night in just a second. But welcome into Bet Sweats. Alongside Kate Constable, I'm Chris Mack. We have got a lot to get to today. CFP gets started tonight in Norman, Oklahoma. And it's a long weekend of NFL action as well that started last night, continues tomorrow, on through Sunday, on to Monday night as well. We'll get into all the football, some Friday feels as well. Kate, good morning. Did you stay up for that entire game last night? And I don't know, better question, how would you have been able to go to sleep with the way that fourth quarter started going?
Yeah, Chris, I'm notoriously like an early bedtime person. So I was going to watch and like in the second half, third quarter, early on, I'm kind of like, okay, this game's out of hand. So let's go to bed. No, I kept it on and I am thankful I did because that was an all-timer last night. I mean, it was absolutely incredible what happened down the stretch. Just the drama of it all. Sam Darnold playing the way he did after those turnovers, the two-point conversion, like so many weird things happened in that game that I am more than happy to say I am tired this morning because I stayed up late to watch that one. But I mean, as exciting as it was, I was out within minutes after that game was over. So like it really didn't, the adrenaline didn't keep me up after. But it was certainly very fun to watch.
I mean, I didn't get a chance to actually turn on the game until about halfway through the third quarter because we had a bunch of other stuff going on. And I feel like I didn't really miss anything. I mean, I missed some things, obviously. But everything of major consequence feels like it happened in the last hour and a half, hour and 15 minutes of that game. And it's something to see the Rams blow a 16-point lead. I will say this, blowing a 16-point lead in the fourth quarter, and I'm not trying to excuse it at all, blowing a 16-point lead in the fourth quarter on the road, on a Thursday against a division rival who has also won 11 games already. Again, I'm not trying to excuse it. This game does not absolutely shake me to my core foundation or belief that the Rams are probably still the best team in the NFC.
Yeah, I mean, I'm totally with you there, especially with the turnover problem that Sam Darnold had. As much as he bounced back after those, like Matthew Stafford was absolutely incredible last night. Puka Nacua, like that team, the offensive line for the Rams is the reason Matthew Stafford could throw for over 400 yards. Their defense had a number of turnovers. So I am still convinced that the Rams are the best team in the NFC. I would take them over the Seahawks if those two teams met again in the regular season. If they meet in the postseason, I will likely be taking the Rams then. So I'm with you there, but I mean, you have to give the Seahawks credit for how they played down the stretch and not allowing some of those mistakes from Darnold to kind of snowball, because that's what we've seen. That's what we saw from him in the first game with the four interceptions.
Right. And I think it's important too, to give credit directly to Sam Darnold, because I said it last night on social media after he threw, I think, the second pick. I threw up the old gif of him from the Jets when he said, "I'm seeing ghosts." I said, "Sammy D is still Sammy D." Turns out he was not Sammy D. After that, he actually was able to ground himself and make some nice throws and not melt down like you talked about the way he did in the first meeting when he threw four picks. To bounce back the way Darnold did after three turnovers in the first three quarters and then lead a 16-point comeback. I'll put it this way. I don't believe in Sam Darnold as, say, a Super Bowl winning quarterback, but I do believe a little bit more in Darnold being able to at least get the Seahawks to, say, the NFC Championship game. And what I would hope, at least as a fan, would be a rematch of last night's game. Because again, I'll say it, I don't think anyone in the NFC is going to be able to beat either one of these two teams in the playoffs. Seattle keeps rolling. despite Darnold being inconsistent because their defense is just so damn good. And the Rams, again, without Devontae Adams, on the road, on a short week, in one of the most hostile environments in the league, still lost in overtime. So both of these teams for me are just the class of the NFC and maybe the class of the league right now.
And Chris, like, I mean, again, I don't want to take too many things away from Sam Darnold, but this game turned when the Seahawks had the punt return for 58 yards for the touchdown. When the two-point conversion, that weird two-point conversion that I know it's the rules, but like, what was it? Zach Charbonnet or Kenneth Walker, one of those two running backs, just walked over and picked up the ball. Like, they weren't recovering that football. They were being polite and handing the football to the ref. Like, that should not have counted as a two-point conversion. Again, I know it's the rules. Like, yes, in the rule book that did count. But, like, those were kind of the turning points of that game that got Seattle back into it and gave them some momentum. And then Sam Darnold went to work. So that's why, in my opinion, it's still the Rams. Because, like, those two not even mistakes with the two-point conversion. Like, that wasn't really the Rams' fault there. But, you know, the punt return for a touchdown, that's special teams' fault. So there were some spots where the Seahawks definitely had a little, I mean, luck, which you need a little luck sometimes to win football games. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and look, on the two-point conversion, I'll say this. This is why two things. One, this is why you always see guys play through the whistle. Like, the ball gets knocked loose, and everybody knows it's an incomplete pass, but one guy's going to run over there and pick it up and start to jog towards the end zone anyway. And that's why guys do it, because you never know anymore. And the second part of that is they never actually blew the whistle. A bunch of guys signaled incomplete pass, but there was no actual blowing of the whistle, which would have effectively ended the play and would have, I guess, taken away the two-point conversion, whether you considered it a lateral or not. Look, I was arguing with one of my friends about this last night. He said it's a stupid rule. It should have been an incomplete pass. It doesn't matter if you think it's a stupid rule or not. Doesn't matter whether Sam Darnold intended to throw it forward or backward. It went backward, and so it's a live ball, and you got to play through the ball and through the whistle. And did it look goofy? Sure, but you can't start coming up with silly rules like, oh, you can't advance a lateral beyond the line of scrimmage, or well, then we're going to take toss sweeps out of the game too. Like, it was just a goofy moment, and it happened to work out in Seattle's favor. Like you said, it was a bit of luck.
Yeah, and that's why they teach you in like Pop Warner, play through the play, end of the play, right? Always play through. I'm with your friend. It's a stupid rule, but it is the rules of football. It still is. Like, I can't. That's my only argument that I have against it, is it's a stupid rule, but it's the rules. So, like, I really can't argue. And I mean, again, that was a massive turning point for them to tie the game, get back into it. And then the Rams didn't do anything else. I mean, the Rams offense was fairly stale in that fourth quarter. I mean, obviously they blew a 16-point lead. The Seahawks entered the game, Chris, 0-172 in team history when trailing by at least 15 points in the fourth quarter. That record now 1-172. So I do think you mentioned, like, what team in the NFC can beat them. I would love to tell you my Chicago Bears. They're now second in the NFC because the Rams lost, but they're not. I don't think they're beating either of those two teams. So I think it's Seattle and LA, the LA Rams, that is, that are coming out of the NFC, whether, you know, it's just which one is it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an important question we can ask ourselves every time, and we'll go through the whole NFL weekend slate today, game by game for the most part. I think every time we bring up an NFC contender or a team that could be considered an NFC contender, you know, we'll talk Packers, Bears, obviously, at the top of the next hour. We'll talk about Philly having a chance to close out the NFC East against Washington, that game also being played tomorrow. You've got Tampa and Carolina meeting with basically the NFC South on the line, although they'll play again in Week 18. You've got Detroit battling for their playoff lives. You've got the Niners going out to Indy on Monday night. So you've got all these other teams that are in the NFC picture, but I think when we get to each of those games, a valuable addition to the conversation with each of those games is, can this team beat the Seahawks or the Rams in the playoffs? Because both of them are priced now at BetMGM as the co-favorites to win the NFC. They're both plus 250, LA and Seattle. And then you go down the board and Eagles plus 550, given the fact their offense has just been atrocious for the better part of the last 3 months, really. I'm not buying a one-week performance against the Raiders as proof that they're back to life yet. Packers plus 650. You just mentioned it. Huge game against Chicago tomorrow. And then you get, I think the Niners are actually, and again, we'll talk about their Monday night game against the Colts a little bit later. The Niners are an interesting look at 10-1 because they've still got an outside shot at that one seed, winning the NFC West and the one seed because they play Seattle in week 18.
Yeah, they're only a game and a half back of Seattle, which is the same now as the Rams are. But the NFC's compared to the AFC, like the AFC, I don't think we can say quite yet, like, you have to beat this team or these two teams to get to the Super Bowl. Like, there are a handful of teams, whether it's the Patriots, whether it's the Bills, whether it's the Broncos, like where they're all live and well. I can make a case against Philly very easily. I can make a case against the Packers very easily with Micah Parsons out now. Like, there are cases where you can kind of draw the black line in a lot of these teams in the NFC and you come up with just a few. The AFC is completely different. So I don't know if that means the NFC is less competitive this year. I don't think you necessarily say that, but maybe a little bit more top heavy with some of the injuries that NFC teams have endured throughout the season.
I think, like we've talked about a couple times this year, both conferences are equally messy. Like, there's not the same sort of stratification that we're used to where you can count on this team being at the top of the conference and, oh, in the AFC, well, the Chiefs are always going to be there, the Ravens. No, it's messy on both sides. I think, like you said, the elite teams, I don't know if anybody in the league is truly elite this year, but the better teams in the NFC are more clearly well-defined, I think, from everybody else. Whereas in the AFC, it's like, hey, if you're in the playoffs, you're live. Anything can happen.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I mean, even with Jacksonville and the Texans in the AFC, like, the Texans may be more Super Bowl. I mean, I would take them to make the Super Bowl over the Jaguars. I don't think the Jaguars are a Super Bowl team is what I'm trying to say. My question for you, though, Chris, is with this Sam Darnold performance last night, like, does that kind of negate what he's the ghost that he's seen against good teams? I'm not sure. I'm totally convinced that it's just like that little curse or whatever, where the storyline that we talk about with that is completely over, because for three quarters of that game, two and a half quarters, like, I was like, wow, Sam Darnold has a big time Rams problem. He's got a big time, big game problem still, which carries over from last year. Like, I would not be confident with this guy in a big time NFC championship game to go to the Super Bowl, big Super Bowl game. I'm not sure if I'm quite there yet with Sam Darnold.
No, I'm definitely not. He's just too inconsistent. And again, this isn't to take anything away from his performance in the fourth quarter and overtime last night. I mean, there have been few games this year, I think, where we have seen quarterbacks flip the way they played for, like you said, three quarters of the game and then do a complete 180 for the most important moments of the game. Sam Darnold did exactly that last night, and he deserves credit for that. I want to be clear about that. But therein lies the problem, in that he played poorly for the first three quarters of the game and in an NFC championship game. If the Seahawks defense were to carry them to the Super Bowl, you can't get away with that. I don't think you can. Now, maybe with the wide open nature of things this year, depending on who you're facing any given week, you can. But that also is the problem with Sam Darnold, in that any given week, you don't know what you're going to get. And forget any given week, it's any given quarter, any given drive. You don't know what Sam Darnold you're going to get. When you get good Sam Darnold, you get really good Sam Darnold, as we saw in the fourth quarter and overtime. When you get bad Sam Darnold, it's really bad Sam Darnold, as we saw in the first three quarters last night.
And from here on out, the stakes only continue to get higher and higher as the weeks go on and we get deeper in to the postseason, where that's when we've seen Darnold struggle the most. And I mean, the sample size is very small from just the Vikings last year, but that concerns me going forward for the Seahawks.
Yeah. When your quarterback is good, anything is possible. Like we're going to talk about with a lot of teams this weekend, both college and pro. When your quarterback is off, feels like you're swimming upstream. And coming up next, we've seen it before. Will we see it again tonight in Norman as the CFP gets started? Why Oklahoma, Alabama all comes down to one big thing next, right here on Bet Sweats. We got early college football today because I know you're all fired up for the old Western Michigan Kennesaw Myrtle Beach Bowl game that kicks off in, God, like an hour and a half, I think. This is, look, if you want meaningless college football, this is the perfect time of year, but we've got big games that actually matter to talk about. I'm convinced Alabama, Oklahoma comes down to simply the quarterbacks, but not for the reason you might be thinking. We'll get into that in a second. Kate, the whole bowl game, the bowl mania, what did they used to call the week between Christmas and New Year's on ESPN where they'd air all the bowls? They had a catchy name for it that I can't remember now because of lack of sleep, staying up to watch Seahawks, Rams. But it's just not the same now that every team, almost every team worth watching, is in the playoff. And so there are very few bowl games that I will watch closely and even fewer that I will actually be betting on because you have no idea who's going to play in 80% of these games, who's going to coach in a lot of them, what's the level of motivation for the players and coaches, how many guys have one eye on the portal while they're supposedly getting ready for these games. And then you lump on top of it that some of the teams you haven't watched at all during the year, like, well, say, Western Michigan and Kennesaw State. And bowl season, it's so watered down at this point. I feel bad, but I just have not nearly as much interest as I used to.
Chris, I could not tell you a matchup of any bowl outside of the CFP, any game outside of the CFP. Like, I really have no desire to pay attention to any of these things. And I probably shouldn't admit that because it's my job to pay attention to what's happening in sports and football games and, you know, handicapping them. And I have not handicapped a single bowl game, a single college football game outside of the CFP this year. Like, you're right. You have no idea what's happening in this game. Most of the time, you have no idea who's playing in these games. It's not the same whatsoever. It used to be awesome. Like, you'd have the New Year's Six bowls, and that was like the big thing that you'd get up, you'd watch, you'd sit there all day, all these awesome bowl games that all kind of, I mean, they varied in degree of how big they were, but they all kind of felt like they still meant something. None of these games feel like they mean anything outside of the CFP.
I know one that should have your attention. I can't believe you're not in on Iowa Vanderbilt in the ReliaQuest Bowl, Kate. Come on. Your Hawkeyes are 5.5-point dogs going into Diego Pavia's curtain call after
is
9 years
playing
as a college quarterback.
I had no idea Iowa was playing Vanderbilt.
Oh, my
God. Like, literally no idea. And that's my school. That's how little I care about bowl games this year. I mean, I was just scrolling through the list and I'm like, okay, I'll probably watch Northwestern because my husband's a diehard Northwestern fan, so I'll have to. I'll probably watch, maybe I'll turn on Minnesota. You know, I grew up in Minnesota, so I like to keep my eyes on the Gophers.
Sure.
I didn't even see Iowa on the schedule to know when or where they're playing. Of course they're playing in the ReliaQuest Bowl, because when are they not playing a meaningless bowl game? I mean, how many Fiesta Bowls has Iowa played in over the last couple of years? Outback Bowls, like, those, it just drives me nuts. So I would take Iowa plus the points here against Vandy, even in the Diego Pavia revenge spot. No, you're saying no?
Pavia all the way. He's going to want to go out lighting the world on fire. He's going to want to burn it down on his way out the door. And it's less than a touchdown? Absolutely. Pavia all the way.
I mean, Chris, it's the Iowa defense. They're going to be in his face all game. They're going to slow this game to a crawl. Look at the total.
Too busy living the nightlife in whatever random city the ReliaQuest Bowl is in.
Yeah, where? Okay, the ReliaQuest is in Tampa. I was going to say, where is it? But I only know that I'm looking at the
college
schedule.
Kids in Tampa, Ybor City. Look out! It's done. It's all Pavia.
Pavi is going to be the one that's out till 4 a.m. Are you kidding
me? He's too old to stay out that late anymore. What are you talking about? Okay, Bama, Oklahoma tonight. I said it's all about the quarterbacks in this game for me. Bama getting a point and a half on the road in Norman. We know that the Sooners won in Tuscaloosa about a month ago, 23-21. They got 17 points off turnovers in that game, though, Kate, including a big Eli Bowen 87-yard pick six. Neither team was able to run the ball. I really think this comes down to what each defense is able to force out of the opposing quarterback, and I mean mistake-wise. John Mateer has been a different quarterback and not really for the best since coming back from the injury. Good Mateer the first 4 weeks had 11 total touchdowns. There was a little slice maybe of good Mateer last week. He threw for more than 300 yards against LSU 2 weeks ago, I should say. Bad Mateer, 6 touchdowns, 8 picks since the injury. Ty Simpson, you could argue, has been good Simpson and bad Simpson too. His last 4 games, 4 interceptions to 5 touchdowns, and Bama's gone 2-2 in those 4 games, including a loss to Oklahoma and the ugly SEC championship game loss. So I hate to oversimplify, but I really do think this game completely comes down to which quarterback is, dare I say, not asked to do too much and therefore isn't able to be forced into dumb mistakes by really good opposing defenses.
Do we get Ty Simpson against Georgia or do we get Ty Simpson for the whole season? That's what I want to know. And I lean towards more of the Ty Simpson from the entirety of the season because he looked awful against Georgia. He looked scared the entire time. He looked like he didn't know what was going on out there. But against this Oklahoma team, the first time they played, I mean, yes, there were turnovers involved in this game, but Simpson also threw for almost 8 yards a pass. So Oklahoma's secondary, it really was not all that great in this game. I like the under in this one, Chris. I think it's a low-scoring game. Like, the under reflects that, too, because, yeah, neither team could run the ball, but both of these defenses are really good. Bama's hit the under in 5 straight games, 8 of their 13 to the under this season. Oklahoma, 10-2 to the under. Their last 3 have gone under. This is a high-stakes game. I'm not sure we're going to get, like, stellar quarterback play. And so I think this comes down to, like you mentioned, what the defenses are able to do. And both of these defenses are pretty top tier.
Yeah. It's been interesting to watch the movement on the total, over the course of the last, not even the last full week, but I would say the last 3 or 4 days. You know, it was 41.5 for a while, dropped, got as low as 39.5 in a few spots, say maybe 24 to 48 hours ago. And now we're seeing it sort of find some equilibrium at 40.5. And I'm happy to take under 40.5. I tend to agree that both quarterbacks, as much as the game is about them, and it is, I stand by that, that it's more about which one doesn't screw up. And I know that doesn't necessarily compute if you're an Alabama fan and you've watched Ty Simpson all year and you go, man, this guy was being talked about as a Heisman candidate for a while. He's being projected into the first round in some cases in mock drafts. I really think it's more likely Ty Simpson goes out there and lays an egg and we get SEC championship game Ty Simpson, or the Ty Simpson we got. You bring up the eight yards per attempt, but the turnovers that we got the first meeting against Oklahoma, I think it's much more likely we get that Ty Simpson, and we're talking about a guy who decides to come back to Tuscaloosa for another year, or depending on the Kalen DeBoer situation, maybe go somewhere else. I mean, all of that is up for grabs, I think, if Ty Simpson does not have a great game and Alabama loses, especially if Alabama loses ugly, because that unfolds the whole Kalen DeBoer situation. As much as he wants to say he stands by Alabama and he's not going anywhere and he doesn't have any interest, if he loses to Oklahoma, and let's say it's not particularly close, like, and that could be like a 27-17 kind of game in something this close, if he loses by 10 to Oklahoma and he's out in the first round of the playoffs after an ugly SEC championship game loss, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised to see him, you know, the old flight tracker, you're gonna see one of those little green dots up towards Michigan from Alabama tomorrow morning.
Oh, people will be firing up the old flight tracker for sure. So Kalen DeBoer's wife apparently doesn't enjoy living in Tuscaloosa, probably because she gets so much hate all the time because Alabama fans are nuts and Bama didn't start the year off hot and everyone was calling for DeBoer's head. Like, what do you think is going to happen if they lose this game? The stakes are significantly higher for Alabama in this game than they are for Oklahoma right now. Like, if Alabama loses this game, the fans are going to be all over DeBoer again, all over his family. I wouldn't be, you're right, Chris. Like, as shocking as it would be for DeBoer to leave Alabama, like, you make it to the top, basically. I think we can agree Alabama is one of the top schools in college football. And you don't have success, and you're almost forced out. Like, isn't that kind of going to be a little bit of a forcing out if DeBoer loses this game and leaves? Because he's not getting any time at Alabama, and no coach really would based on the expectations there, but no coach is Nick Saban.
Well, it's why you never want to be the guy that replaces the guy. You don't.
Right.
Because the expectations are going to be wildly out of control, and we could all see this coming in for Kalen DeBoer. And no, you're right. Nobody's Nick Saban. And so you really do need to consider, if you're Kalen DeBoer, I think, whatever Michigan may place on the table for you. And I have a hard time believing they haven't reached out and haven't actually started to talk about things. Maybe DeBoer hasn't really listened, but that's what agents are for. Agents will do all the listening and all the negotiating in the background while you're preparing for the college football playoff. And I think he's got to know that there's, I wouldn't call it a golden parachute, so to speak, but he's going to get paid and he's going to get to go to a program that's more in his part of the country, still a storied program, certainly one that's had a lot of issues over the last few years, but also has a national championship in its rearview mirror over the last half decade. So I think if you're Kalen DeBoer, you're insane not to consider a move to Michigan if things don't go your way tonight. Now, the other side of the coin would be you beat Oklahoma. You go to, what is it, the Rose Bowl against Indiana on New Year's Day. Who knows what can happen there? I've never seen so much for the two most important members of a program, the head coach and the quarterback. I've never seen so much on the line in one single specific game as there is on the line for Kalen DeBoer and Ty Simpson tonight in Norman, Oklahoma.
Well, draft boards have already started coming out, like the mock drafts, first rounders, everything like that. How much does Ty Simpson drop if he loses this game? Because then the last thing that scouts have seen are back-to-back poor games by Ty Simpson. And that's assuming he plays poorly in order to lose this game. I think draft stock would drop and he would come back to school. So, yeah, this is a massive game for both those two people. So, Chris, I mean, you even just bringing up the fact that you think this could be problems for Alabama, problems for DeBoer, problems for Simpson – makes me think you're on Oklahoma tonight.
Yeah.
And possibly totally. Oklahoma big tonight.
I don't know if I'm necessarily on them big. I'll say this. My favorite bet on this game is the one you already mentioned. It's the under.
Yeah.
Because I think both defenses are going to force, like I said, the opposing quarterbacks and offenses to piece together drives to score. I don't think we're going to see a ton of big plays. And I think if you held my feet to the fire and made me place a bet on a side, yes, it would be Oklahoma money line, -115 at BetMGM. I just think, like you said, there's a ton of pressure on the Tide, and we just outlined everything that rests on this one single particular game for DeBoer and for Simpson specifically. For Oklahoma, I don't want to say it's all gravy, but it is. Like, last year, you were a mess. And I remember railing against Brett Venables and talking about what a bum he was and how he was never going to get it right at Oklahoma. Well, guess what? Here he is. He had to go out and get a quarterback to get it done. And that quarterback, after getting hurt, has not looked quite like himself. But for Oklahoma, I don't want to say you're just happy to be there, but you're getting a home playoff game. You're in front of your own crowd on a Friday night. The whole world's watching. I think even if you lost this game, as long as you didn't lose ugly, yeah, okay, we got to the playoff. We bounced back after an ugly year or two. And so there's very little pressure, I feel like, on the Sooners tonight. It's all on the Tide. And I'm very curious to see how both coaches and quarterbacks react to that pressure. I think Oklahoma, Brett Venables, John Mateer are going to react just slightly better than Alabama and DeBoer and Simpson. So, yeah, if you held my feet to the fire, Kate, I would be on Oklahoma here, but I'm probably just going to ride with the under.
Also worth noting, like, Oklahoma made it here with John Mateer missing a couple of games with that hand injury, coming back, like, that Texas game right after the hand injury. Like, he wasn't his normal self for a couple games this season, and they still made it here. Also, the line has completely flipped in this one. It opened Alabama minus 1.5. Like, now we're Oklahoma minus 1.5. That's a big flip to cross the zero, those numbers. So I'm not playing a side here, Chris. You make a pretty strong argument for Oklahoma. I'm with you, though. I'm going under 40.5, Bama, Oklahoma tonight.
We'll get into the other college football playoff games a little bit later. But coming up next, Inside Our Friday Feels, the elephant in the room, next on Bet Sweats. Coming up in just a second, we get into our Friday Feels, an elephant in the room that will be addressed. Not an actual physical one. My office isn't that big. And top of the hour, there are two games being played on the NFL slate tomorrow. Yeah, we got some NFL Saturday action, and three of the four teams involved in those games have an opportunity to clinch something of some sort this weekend. We'll talk Philly, Washington, and a massive game in Chicago between the Bears and the Packers. Like I said, right at the top of the hour in about 20 minutes here on Bet Sweats alongside Kate Constable. I'm Chris Mack. Let's get into our Friday Feels, shall we?
It's all about the vibes on this Football Friday. It's our Friday Feels on Bet Sweats.
And Kate and I have filled in for Joe Ostrowski and Sam Panayotovich plenty over the last couple of years. When they go to the pen, the manager skipper walks out to the mound and throws that hand up, says, "Hey, give me the southpaw." We are more than happy to come in and do so. But I would be remiss if I didn't note that there's a lot going on around here these days. If you pay attention to Bet Sweats on a regular basis, you know that. And I'll start by saying this. If you pay attention to this time frame, this window, this day part, as they call it in our business, on a regular basis, then the one consistent voice that you've heard over the last, what's it been now, 5 years that the network has existed is Joe Ostrowski's voice. Joe has been doing what he does, talking about sports betting on the radio for, I mean, heck, dude's been doing it for nearly a quarter century now. And he knows his stuff. And he and Sam have a history. And so the fact that those two are going to stay together and continue to do something outside of the network, I think is great, because Joe was always and continues to be, I was just texting with him last night during the game, continues to be great to me. I'm sure he has been to you as well, Kate, but Joe Ostrowski was one of the backbones of this network by virtue of he was here in this time frame every day. And whether it was alongside Joe G, Aaron Hawksworth, Ed Egros, me, Sam Panayotovich, Joe was the one constant in this time frame the entire time. And so we would be remiss if we did not recognize the fact that yesterday was the last day of the current iteration of Bet Sweats as we all make a massive transition, Kate, to the new Westwood One Sports Network that will launch exactly 10 days from today.
Yeah, I mean, Joe, you can't really say enough about what Joe has meant to this network, to, like you said, this time slot. When I first joined the network, I was so intimidated by Joe because he had been here forever, because he knows his betting stuff like no other, and he's good at it. And not only that, he's good at radio. Like, he's been a professional in this industry for a very long time, but the more you get to know Joe and kind of peel back the layers a little bit, I started working on a show with him, BetMGM Game Day last year, and he's just as good of a guy as he is on the radio, off the radio. Like, a great person, always willing to help, always willing to just listen, talk, whiz, and so I appreciate appreciate everything that Joe has brought to this network, has taught me just from listening to him. And he and Sam together, and I told Joe this the other day, I said, I listen to you guys all the time because I learn stuff from you guys still. Mm-hmm. And as someone on the network, like, you can still learn from your peers, as anyone should be. You should be listening to other people and try to understand what makes them so great at what they are. And I feel like Joe, I mean, maybe not out publicly or anything, but Joe's played a big role in my development in this industry just from listening to his shows and he and Sam together. So I feel for the guys with the show being over, but I echo your sentiment that I'm glad they're staying together and they're going to do some stuff on the side, and I'm going to continue to listen to them because I want to continue to learn. And those are two of the best, to learn from in the betting space.
Yeah. And there are a lot of people that are unfortunately not going to be making the move to the Westwood One Sports Network from the BetMGM network. And that includes a lot of the people whose names maybe you hear occasionally get brought up on the air, but maybe you don't see their faces all that often or hear their voices all that often. And that includes two people that were always immensely good, I think, to the both of us, but especially to me when I was in on this show for like a 6-month period a while back, doing it every day with Joe and Aaron Hawksworth at the time. And that would be Paul Aspen, who was the executive producer of this show, and Brian Gertsch, the video producer for this show, as well as everybody who's board opt on this show, Double D, who's on the board right now included, Jake Hassan, who is, he's going to take this the wrong way because he takes everything I try to say complimentary about him the wrong way. He's like a little brother. That's the way I look at Jake. That's in the most complimentary way possible. I love the dude. And it's hard to close chapters and move on to new ones. And you feel for the people that you've become friends with over the years, that now they are in a position where they've got to go seek out new opportunities through no fault of their own. And that's the key part here, through no fault of their own, all incredibly talented, incredibly hardworking. And again, a special thanks to every single one of them, like you, Kate. When I came into this network several years ago, kind of on a part-time interim basis and still kind of in on that basis now, it was with not nearly as much sports betting knowledge as a lot of the people that were already on the network. A ton of radio knowledge from having worked in it for a couple decades, since I was a kid, really. But they all welcomed me in with open arms and made it extremely easy to jump in midstream. Mike Tomlin has one of his thousands, his litany of Tomlinisms that he calls jumping on a moving train. They all made it very easy for me to jump on the moving train as a part of the BetMGM network. And I couldn't say thank you to those people enough, especially the ones that I worked with in this time frame directly, all the people I just mentioned, especially Paul and Brian and Jake, mm-hmm, and Double D, everybody who was a part of it. It's hard to know that some of us are moving on to future opportunities, and they're not going to be a part of it.
Yeah, it's going to be weird. It's going to be very weird. And I'm glad you mentioned some of the people behind the scenes, because they don't get seen or heard as much as Joe and Sam, but the shows would not happen without those people behind the scenes, without Paul booking guests, Gertsch doing the video, Jake on the board. And then I know we're talking about this time slot in particular, but also like Chelsea and Jenks in the morning time. Those two have been phenomenal too. And they will no longer have their time slot going forward after today. It was their last day. So shout out to those two as well. I know you and I have both filled in on that show. Those two are awesome to work with. And that's, again, not to say anything about the afternoon shows. I just haven't worked on those shows. So those people are all great. I just haven't been on those shows. So the morning shows in particular kind of have a special place, I think, in both of our hearts. But just very grateful for the people on those shows. And like you said, how easy they've made it any time that we are called in from the bullpen to step in and help. It's not only been just easy, but it's also fun because of all of them.
And like I said, they're are future opportunities for some of us, Kate and I included, who will be moving forward as a part of the Westwood One Sports Network. I'll be jumping on board after the Super Bowl. Kate's going to jump in, I think, right from the get-go, right, Kate?
continuing BetMGM Game Day with Jason Lockenfora. So that same time slot that we've had, and we've been doing that show for the first 16 weeks of the season, we'll continue to do that show, Jason and I. And then as soon as the Super Bowl's over, Chris, it's me and you going forward, and it's full speed ahead.
Yeah. So, it's really hard when this kind of stuff happens. It's never easy. This business, I'll just be honest, it's a ton of fun. It is. We get to sit down and talk about sports, and in the case of the BetMGM Network, talk about betting and everything that goes into it. And there's such a commonality and such, you know, in a world of Bruce Gilbert, who is one of the leaders of the new Westwood One Sports Network, said this yesterday on a call that we were all on that are going to be a part of the new network going forward. In a world that is so wildly divisive, and it feels like the temperature is turned up to 1,000 on every conversation about everything all the time. Oh, you're this, you're that, you're the other thing. It's nice to have the world of sports where it feels like people can come together and have passionate conversations that don't end with you flipping someone off as you walk away or complaining about someone else's political views. It simply comes down to sports. Sports is fun, and this job is fun. Doesn't mean that a fun job can't still exist in an industry in the world of media. It sucks sometimes. And the people that are not going to be a part of this going forward, who have been so good to us, it sucks. I'll just say it. It sucks that they're not going to be a part of it. I'm going to miss them wildly. And yeah, we'll keep in touch, but we won't get to have the fun that we all have together on the air together again anytime soon. And yes, it's okay to say the industry sucks sometimes while still acknowledging that you have a fun job. And I think those two things, as much as it may not seem like they coexist when you bring them both up, they do.
Yeah, that was really well said, Chris. They do both coexist because it can really suck and it can be awesome to talk about sports. I think one of the things I'm going to miss most about a lot of the people that aren't moving forward with the new network is the fun we have in the breaks, because that's part of it too. Like, half the time our commercial breaks are just out of control, wild, weird conversations that never make it on air. And that's half the fun of not only talking about sports on the air, but all the like quirky things that you get to know about your coworkers in those 4 minute, 5 minute commercial breaks that we have. And so while others may continue in other ventures, and of course, yeah, we're still going to keep in touch and not lose those relationships, it will be a little different. And that's going to be that's the sucky part of it overall. Yeah. But I am excited for you and I going forward. We still get to talk about sports on Sundays. It's going to be awesome. And we'll make the most of it, Chris.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I cannot wait. And again, the new Westwood One Sports Network launches 10 days from today, Monday, December 29th. You'll be able to find it on Sirius and all the same places you find the BetMGM Network right now, wherever you get your podcasts, wherever you get your live streams, inside the Odyssey app, all of that. But didn't want to let the first edition of Bet Sweats without Joe O and Sammy P go without saying a little something about them. Football of the NFL variety tomorrow. Might be time to call some bluffs in Chicago. I'll tell you what I mean next here on the BetMGM Network.